welcome to another episode of the Beyond the Core Show. It's Wednesday, August 25th, and we've got a few topics for you tonight. We're going to start off with a little bit of baseball, talk about the Giants-Reds game today. We're going to move on after that to the commencement of fantasy football season starting up, and with the real season starting a few weeks away. We'll also touch upon the Tiger Elin divorce and a couple interesting news topics, which you'll be hopefully intrigued to hear about. So we'll lead off with the Giants-Reds game today, which was, by all accounts, an absolutely just crazy game. The Giants were down 10-1 in the fifth inning. It came all the way back to take an 11-10 lead before committing an error in the bottom of the ninth, blowing the save, and then losing the game 12-11 in 12 innings.
Barry Zito giving up the winning run, by the way.
Yeah, the Giants ran out of pitchers. I guess that's what happens when you have a guy, when your starter goes 2 2/3 innings and you have to go 12 innings. You eventually run out of bullpen arms. And on one hand, if the Giants had just gotten their asses kicked from the start, like if it was just 10-3 in the final, you know, you would have felt bad about it, but you would have just moved on. But the fact that they made such a magnificent comeback and then kind of still blew the game, that stings a lot. I mean,
yeah,
it's one of those...
screws up your bullpen for the next week. You know,
they have to figure out who to start too. They have an off day tomorrow, but they have to figure out who to start Friday, I assume, because Zito was supposed to go Friday.
Yeah. This thing kind of happens to everyone this time of year. You know, it's getting to late August. People are getting tired. And you saw it the other day with the Phillies. They put Roy Oswalt out in the field, and he caught a fly ball, and he got a standing ovation.
So, he did. You know, and
this happens to teams.
Exactly. And it's funny because the Giants actually have been carrying too many pitchers the whole year, like 12 or 13. And then now that they've traded for like 7 different outfielders, they basically got rid of a few of those relievers, and today is a day they definitely could have used them. But Pac Bell Park has been, or whatever, Phone Park, AT&T Park, whatever you want to call it.
Phone Company Park.
Has been playing like a hitter's paradise the last few days. The Giants have put up 11, 16, and 11. And I guess that's what happens when San Francisco gets a little bit of a heat wave. So we'll see what happens. How do you feel about Mr. Manny possibly leaving the Dodgers?
I'm pretty happy about it. I hope he's gone, and I hope he takes his contract with him. He's got a couple million left, I think, for the rest of the year, and then a couple million in deferred payments. So anything to relieve the McCourt divorce fund will be a welcome change. And hopefully he can bring back a few prospects, you know? I mean, you're probably not going to get much for him, but, you know, any young player you could get for the load that is Manny Ramirez at this point is, you know, better than nothing.
I have a feeling that if Manny got picked up by someone,
well, everyone
would suddenly be healthy and suddenly kick ass.
The White Sox, you know, and he would go in and immediately become their everyday DH. But I don't know if he has another miraculous turnaround in him. You know, I don't know if he has the same desire. Because when he came to the Dodgers, the way things ended with the Red Sox, he was in fuck you mode. You know, he wanted to piss off everyone involved in the Red Sox organization and show them that he still had it. But, you know, at this point, he's just old and broken down, and, you know, he got the steroid thing against him, and I think he's just beaten, and I don't think he's got another one of those miraculous turns left in him.
That is true that he's kind of been broken down, and, you know, this is the first time he's really had health issues as opposed to motivational issues. But he is playing for a contract again. His contract expires. And
yes, that is true.
You never know. A good month or two will definitely put someone else's put him on someone else's radar. Sorry. But I think it'll be interesting to see where he goes. And I personally think he's going to come alive whenever he does. But I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, we'll all keep one eye on that and the other eye on, on the divorce proceedings. The Dodgers also put Casey Blake, Scott Podsednik, and Jay Gibbons on waivers, which I don't know if that's really exciting news, but, you know, Scott Podsednik, they just acquired a couple months ago. Casey Blake, you know, arguably should never have been here because of Carlos Santana. You know, that trade just looks worse and worse by the day, and I still maintain that, you know, Casey Blake got us to those two NLCSs, and, you know, for that, the trade was semi-worth it, but you know, I lose ground on that position every day.
I was gonna quote that on you and see how you still felt about it.
I know. Yeah, I mean, I still maintain that, but yeah, it's getting a less strong of a position, I'll admit.
Yeah, I think it's that time of year when everyone's kind of praying that, you know, someone's gonna be taken off and claimed off waivers, and the Giants have already made, in some sense, they've done well making moves because they didn't really give up anything to Cody Ross and Jose Guillen.
Oh, they got Cody Ross? I didn't even know.
Yeah, they got Cody Ross a few days ago.
Oh, good
claimed
for
him off waivers.
I like Cody Ross. He was a Dodger.
He was a Dodger
a few
yeah.
years ago, and they couldn't find a spot for him in the outfield. And he immediately goes to Florida and hits like 25 home runs. So,
yeah, he played okay in Detroit too, and then he went to Florida and kind of came alive. And he's really just kind of a platoon bat. But now the Giants are currently carrying Cody Ross, Jose Guillen, Pat Burrell, Andres Torres, Nate Sherholtz, Aaron Rowand, and Aubrey Huff. Huff can play first base, obviously, but they're playing six outfielders for three spots.
Jeez.
And
to me,
the way that they should be playing is Torres should be playing every day and possibly platooning with Ross. And then Burrell should be in there every day. And then Guillen shouldn't really be playing, in my opinion. But neither should Rowan or Sheerholtz. So.
Yeah, to me, Sheerholtz is the obvious odd man out in that group. I mean, he's got to go. I mean, he makes the least amount of money, I think. And
exactly. I mean, the Giants would love to get rid of Rowan, but obviously there's no way that they can possibly do that.
Yeah, no
and
one
he's
can
really
take that
getting,
contract.
He's kind of just getting like a pity start. He was getting like two starts a week before, and now I'm sure it'll be down to like one start a week, and that was more just out of pity than anything else. But it's funny because now the Giants jokingly had this, what I told you, is the Wild Kingdom outfield with the water buffalo in the corners, Burrell and Huff, and then the gazelle, Torres, in center. Well, now they go, you know, they go with their all bat line at the start, which is usually Guillen, Torres, and Burrell. But then in the late innings, they just bring in Sheerholtz and then Rowand, or I guess Sheerholtz and Rowand usually along with Torres. And the bench, they still cannot defend on the left side of the infield at all because Uribe and Sandoval have, like, negative range at this point. But, you know, you can't
carry,
like,
everything.
You can't carry six outfielders and still have, like, multiple utility men in the infield.
Yeah.
And actually, I personally did some research, and I was looking at – this is getting too nerdy for the average fan, but I was looking at basically the Giants' breakdown by month. And every single month, the Giants' team ERA has been, like, pretty solid in the, like, high threes. Their FIP has been pretty consistently in the high threes. Their strand rate has been, like, at 76, 78%. Their batting average on balls and plays is consistently around, like, 290 to 300. But this month, they're actually giving up fewer line drives, which are most likely going to turn into hits. They're giving up fewer grounders and fewer fly balls and more grounders, which means that they should technically be giving up less runs. But their batting average on balls in play is at like 330. And that's, in my opinion, attributable to the left side of the infield. And I could keep going with that, but I'm going to stop.
All right.
But yeah, basically the Giants, I think that's a huge reason why they're struggling right now. I think that's a huge reason why the staff hasn't been as good as it has looked in the past, is because the defense isn't as good right now.
Yeah, you lost me at FIP.
Yeah,
everything after that was kind of a blur.
One of these days we'll have a sabermetrics tutorial and everyone. But yeah, so I don't know. I don't know what the Giants are going to do, but luckily they're still tied for first in the wild cards.
Well,
so.
Yeah, do you feel good that you have a team that's still in the race?
It's a new feeling, Steve. It's been a little while since I've had a chance to care.
I know.
I mean, it's been a while since I've had an opportunity to just like scoreboard watch other teams, even because usually it's like, you don't really care what anyone else is doing because it just doesn't matter.
The universe is balancing itself out right now.
I'm liking it. I'm liking
it. So the last few years of Dodger playoff prominence.
Yes, exactly. So the next topic, you know, we're getting into late August here, which means that football season is coming up pretty shortly here. And for many Americans, that means it's the start of fantasy football season. So, Steve, have you done any fantasy football leagues this year? Do you plan to do any leagues?
I plan to do one league with my high school buddies that I do every year. I try not to do too many leagues that I don't care about, like join a bunch of public random leagues. I used to do that back in the day, but then you lose interest and, you know, you start following the teams that you're winning in and, you know, that, and you lose track of everything else. So I find it better, more enjoyable to just take care of one team no matter of how, no matter how that team is doing. And so I'm sticking to my one high school buddy league this year.
Okay.
And nothing else.
Okay. Is it a? It's just like a regular.
Yeah, regular 12-team snake draft. You know, no real high stakes. But you know, I find.
Do you put money on it, or is it a?
No, it's for pride. It's for. I mean.
Okay. You know, purely for bragging rights.
Yeah, my friends really only care about basketball anyway, so this is kind of just like a fill in between. You know, until the NBA season starts again.
Tied you over to November,
I,
huh?
I will say, though, fantasy football, I feel, is the most enjoyable out of all the fantasy games because you don't have to check it every single day like basketball and baseball. You don't have to fill out a lineup every single day. For football, you can check the lineup like once or twice a week, and you know, every Saturday or every Sunday morning you wake up, you set your lineup once, and then you forget about it for a while. You know, it's... Baseball, I find, is it's really tough. It takes a lot of your time. You have to check the lineup cards every day to make sure that your guys are actually playing, because baseball is notorious for giving guys days off without any warning to the public. You know, unlike football, where guys are placed on, you know, injury notices throughout the entire week and you can monitor them very easily. So, you know, fantasy football is by far the most enjoyable of the big three fantasy sports, I feel.
That's fair. I'm exactly the opposite of you. Fantasy football is usually the least enjoyable for me because it's the most boring because nothing really happens.
Yeah, it is the most random. I would say like it there is the most amount of luck involved in fantasy.
Yeah, I think there's the least amount of skill in fantasy football. I think what I really like about it is just the fact that more people are into it. So like it's really hard for me to find a really good baseball league because most people can't take baseball as seriously as I do. But for football, everyone's down, and it's, you know, it's great to just get together on a Sunday and just watch a ton of football and, you know, track your team and, like, you know, trash talk with your friends.
Right.
That's one of the most enjoyable aspects. Now, the leagues themselves, to me, usually aren't that interesting, even if I put, you know, usually I put money on at least two or three of them just to, like, keep myself vested in checking every week. But this year, I've started a new league, and I think that it's going to be really exciting. It's an auction keeper league. It's my first auction keeper league in football ever. And we had our auction draft on Monday. And first of all, I have to say that, like, if you're a fantasy player at all, like, if you kind of enjoy fantasy leagues at all, you need to give auctions a try because I personally, if I had a choice, I would never do a draft again. Auctions are like so much more fun. They take so much more skill. And because drafts, I mean, it's just the luck of the draw. And especially in a league like football where it's like, okay, well, you either get like, you know, one of the top four backs or you don't. You know, your fate is determined by your draft spot, which is completely random. In an auction league, it's completely, you know, you play it however you want to play it. So,
everyone has a shot at every player, and so it's up to you to manage your salary cap and make sure your team rounds out well.
Exactly.
I have never myself done an auction. I've been trying to get my fantasy basketball keeper league to switch to an auction for the last year or so. We've been running a snake draft. And, you know, yeah, you say the same thing that I hear from everyone else. Everyone I've talked to who's done an auction draft said it is just far superior to a snake draft in every way.
Yeah. I mean, I've been doing snake drafts my entire life, and I started playing fantasy when I was, like, 11 years old. And so, like, you know, it took a long time to get over that. And, like, it's only because of my other baseball, my really intense baseball league, where it's basically like an auction and it's a keeper league, a dynasty league, that I started to really think about, you know, first of all, there's two main elements. The keeper part is great because it keeps the teams interested from year to year. And you can kind of foresee the league going on for a long period of time. So, like, for example, with you and your friends, you're going to do a league every year. So you might as well make it a keeper league and make it fun to like keep guys from year to year. The auction part is just another, it's almost more of like, you know, a management scheme or like an economic scheme to like add another element besides the football part to it.
Do auctions take a long time, though?
Auctions do take a long time.
That's the one thing that worries me, because, you know, with our snake drafts, they already last, you know, a few hours, and so I'm just worried that an auction draft will take the entire day, basically.
Well, our auction draft took about 2.5 hours, but...
Oh, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, but the difference, though, is that in a snake draft, you can, like, space out for a while. Like, you can just come back and check. Let's say you're, like, at one of the ends, right? Then, you know, you won't be picking for another, like, 10 minutes at least, right?
Right,
you can kind of, yeah. In an auction league, every single player gets bid on, and you have, like, basically at least 30 seconds to bid on them. So, like, you always have to be paying attention. You can't be, like, I mean, you can kind of surf the internet and do research on the side, but, like, you can't, like, you know, go cook dinner and come back, or, like, even go to the bathroom and come back, because basically, like, you need to be there.
So how do you pee during an auction?
Well, you gotta be prepared. So for example, I made sure I went to the bathroom beforehand. I had all my food. I had my energy drinks on the side. I pulled up all my windows for tabs and stuff I need to research. Like preparation, and the thing is in an auction, like you can't prepare like you do for a regular draft because things happen that you don't foresee happening. So, for example, and this this is kind of mean.
Like some fool pays $30 for Jamal Charles or something like that?
Well, so what happened in this year's league, so I'm not going to take credit for this because I stole this off someone else, but I did a bunch of mock auction drafts because I'd never done an auction before, and I wanted to like get some experience with it beforehand. And one of the first drafts I was in, someone had put out Adrian Peterson with the second person, like the second person nominated was Adrian Peterson, right? And so I was like, oh God, Adrian Peterson. Okay, so I bid like $50 and and then I'm like, okay, well, and then I look and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's the Seattle Adrian Peterson. It's not the Minnesota one. It's the really shitty one that's been around in the league for the last 6 years and hasn't really done anything. And so I was like, you know what? That's an ingenious strategy. And I did it in my league this year. And someone paid like $54 for him, and or $52 for him, and was like basically fucked because they've spent like a quarter of their budget on a guy who's never going to play.
That's brutal, kind of dirty, and, but also really funny.
It was mean, but at the same time, it's like, hey man, I'm in it to win it, you know? Like,
no, that's what you get for not paying attention.
If I can knock out one team in the first like in the first minute and a half of the season, hey, I'll do it.
That so, basically fucks up your team for, you know, the rest of the draft.
He basically had, like, no money. He actually also got, I think he wanted the real Adrian Peterson, so he basically spent $114 on the two Adrian Petersons. and, like, you know, after that, it's pretty hard to recover, so.
Yeah, you might as well leave the rest of the auction.
Yeah, and I think I actually bid him up on the three Adrian Petersons. I feel kind of bad about it. If that was me that had happened to me, I would just hate my life. It would be really hard for me to take that league seriously for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a tip for anyone who's doing an auction. If you want to be an asshole, you have to be one of the first few picks because you can't let AP get taken real one. Otherwise, it's gonna be obvious. But you know, you just open the bidding at $1, and someone else will probably most likely bid it up, and it'll be fine. So anyway, that's my little spiel on fantasy football this year, and I think. This is the first year in the last like 3 or 4 years that I've taken it seriously, but I'm thinking it's going to be a lot of fun. So a lot of it's just finding a league that's going to make it exciting for you.
Yeah.
What All was right. next on your list?
Let's move on to the biggest sports scandal of the last decade, really. Tiger and Elon Woods finalized their divorce earlier this week. And just today, Elon Woods came out in People magazine to give what is going to be her only interview to the press before she presumably moves off to Sweden forever and nobody hears from her again. So, what do you think this is going to do to Tiger, Paul? Do you think now that Elon is going to officially be gone, do you think this is going to help his game? Or do you think he's just going to continue to spiral downward into nothingness?
I think somewhere in the middle. I think he'll win again. I think he's, you know, he's too talented not to. I don't buy the fact that, like, now that they're divorced, he can, like, get over that distraction and now he can concentrate on golf because I think Tiger's tried really hard over the last few years or the last few months to, like, repair things. And most likely he's going to be emotionally hurt, you know, from a divorce like that. So I don't really foresee him bouncing back. I don't see him falling apart either. What about you?
Do you think he's going to break Jack Nicklaus's record now? I think he needs five more majors.
He needs five more, and I would have definitely thought so, like, you know, a year ago, a year and a half ago.
Yeah, now, though, not a sure thing.
Yeah, which is pretty – it's kind of sad because it would have been really tough for him to do anyway, but now it's going to be really, really hard because he's basically – as a golfer, like, you can last for a long time, but your prime is not, you know, he's at the end of his window for a normal golfer anyway, in terms of being in the prime.
Yeah, and the mental fuck-up that he has gone through is so brutal, and golf being such a mental game, you know, I don't think he can recover from this. You know, five majors, he can't even win a single tournament right now. And
yeah,
I don't even know in a year or two if he's still going to be able to win a single tournament. He just looks so awful. I mean, he's been finishing like 48th and 70 whatever at these tournaments the last few weeks, and it doesn't look like Tiger Woods that we know.
Doesn't. And I think the biggest thing Tiger always had, I mean, he obviously had all the physical tools, but he had that swagger. And he doesn't have anything close to that.
Yeah, no one's afraid of him now. You know, Rory McIlroy was talking shit that no one is afraid of Tiger anymore. And, you know, if his game doesn't improve, everyone would love to face him. And, you know, before, a few years ago, if someone had said that, you know, the press would have been all over that guy. Like, oh, the nerve of this guy. You know, what has he won? But now, you know, everyone just kind of nods their head and agrees with him. So it's really shocking.
It is. I'm going to go away from the golf side and talk about the emotional side for a second, because I had a really big conversation with, like, one of my parents' friends and one of my other friends in New York. What do you think about, you know, what do you think about Elin? How do you think it was handled? What's your take on things? I mean, do you think she's getting away with just getting a whole bunch of money? Do you think she handled it pretty well?
Well, how much money did she take?
No one knows, but the rumors are north of 100 million.
I mean, that's a whole lot of money. And really, how much of that did she earn? Not much, right? I mean,
yeah, true.
I think that's more than she deserves. But at the same time, she was so incredibly wronged. I find it hard to disagree. You know, if Tiger is willing to give her that much, then, you know, all the power to him. Because it's hard for me to say that, you know, it's unjustified, she didn't do anything to earn it, when, you know, he has this whole cavalcade of sluts that are coming out, you know, to all the tabloids every week. And, you know, she has experienced humiliation to the level that not many people on Earth have ever experienced. You know, the media today is so widespread that, you know, there aren't many people who haven't heard of Tiger Woods' dalliances at this point. You know, that wasn't the case. Let's say this happened in, like, 1970-something. It wouldn't nearly be the same level of embarrassment as it is now.
No, definitely not. So, I personally... Oh, go on.
No, go ahead. I mean, I don't really have anything else to say. It's just, it's hard for me to disagree with whatever Elin gets, because just the level of wrongness that she had to endure.
I personally think that it's a really tough situation, and I don't even care about the money. For me, like, whatever money she gets, she deserves, because she went through all that, and the dollar amount to me is almost nothing, because I don't think she's, I mean, yes, she wants the money, she deserves the money, whatever, but I don't think she's in it for the money. And I really have to say that I respect her a lot for getting this divorce and for not shutting up about it, because I think she's handled this really well.
About as well as you can handle it.
You know, I'm sure Tiger...
She stayed quiet. Well, she stayed away from Barbara Walters and Katie Couric and, you know, these people that you know are knocking on her door and asking her for an interview every day.
Yeah, well, I think, you know... Honestly, first and foremost, in her mind, should be the kids, and it has been the kids. I think Tiger probably offered a ton of money to her to never say anything about it, and I'm happy that she didn't take it and that she decided that there are just
Well, I mean, we don't know what happened under the table. I mean, that could have been the case. You know,
I'm sure she was offered a ton more money to never talk about it. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. Because it does nothing for Tiger to have her all say all this. But what she did do really well was she didn't lash. I mean, yes, she spoke about how hurt she was, but she didn't, like, belittle him. She didn't bring him down. Like, you know, obviously she talked about her emotional anguish, but she didn't, you know, lash out negatively. And she didn't also call attention to herself and, like, you know, get a reality show or something about it.
Right.
And I think she handled it very classily. And I think that, honestly, the fact that she's going to stay in Florida near Tiger means that she's a great mother to her kids, because that's honestly the most important thing. And I'm just really, I'm very impressed with how well she handled the situation. You know, Tiger blustered his way through everything, but I respect Elin's decision to leave, and I also respect her ability to kind of, like, stay like neutral enough for her kids to, you know, have less of a messed up childhood.
Or as least of a messed up one as possible. I mean, you know, as soon as they, you know, go to school or wherever they're going to school, that they're going to get it from all of their peers. I mean, it's just, but yeah, she's definitely made the best situation as you can get from, you know, what she's been dealt.
Yeah, because personally, if she had never talked about it, I'm not sure I would have, like, it would have been hard for me to hold it against her, because I know that maybe it would have been better for the kids. But at the same time, I would have had less respect for her, because I would have thought that she, like, was a bit of a pushover. And, you know, not only did she talk about it, but she didn't completely blow it out of proportion. She just basically honestly said what she felt. And I think that everything she said sounded incredibly heartfelt to me, like incredibly genuine. So good for her, at least in my opinion, good for her. Anyway, we're going to move on to a little bit of news now. And our first topic is about Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin, who recently shot a whale with a crossbow, which adds to his list of accomplishments.
That's right. Yeah, you didn't hear that wrong, people. Vladimir Putin shot a whale with a crossbow.
Exactly. He also has swum through an icy river, put a tracking collar on a tranquil polar bear, tranquilized a tiger, and released leopards into the wild. Which begs the question, Steve, is this guy the most interesting man in the world?
I don't always drink beer, but when I do, I prefer Dos Equis.
I love that he says prefer.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like I can drink other things,
but...
I'm more inclined to go to Dos Equis if I have to pick one.
Because the most interesting man in the world can drink whatever. He's not beholden to Dos Equis just because he endorses them.
Absolutely.
He can drink whatever he wants.
Those, I was talking about this last night, actually. Those commercials are just, they're obviously so well done, but I just love that they take, like, random video clips of him, like, in a cave, or, like, playing High Lie, you know, like...
And at different stages of his life, too, so you can see, like, the younger
right,
him.
Like, the progression, yeah. Which is funny, though, because I also think that, I don't know if you've heard the radio spots, but those are even better, in my opinion.
Yeah, they basically list a bunch of Chuck Norris-like facts about him.
Exactly, they're just straight up the whole time... Just like one after another. We're not going to bother with playing video clips. We're going to squeeze as much as we can into 30 seconds with that background music in the background.
Yeah, you know what? Vladimir Putin might be the real life most interesting man in the world. I mean, who else is president of one of the two most powerful nations in the world and also finds time to do all this outdoorsy, manly stuff? I mean, what is Obama doing? Right now, Obama is on Martha's Vineyard reading a book. You know, he's not wrestling any whales or, you know, shooting bears. You know, that's what Obama ought to be doing to compete with Vladimir Putin.
Yes, you're right. He would gain so much more respect at the negotiating table if he engaged in these activities. What is it with all these Russian crazy guys, like the New Jersey Nets guy?
Yeah, first Prokhorov. Now, I mean, all these Russians, they love doing wild stuff. They have lots of money and
lots of time to kill,
I guess.
Doesn't Putin also have an exercise tape or something? He's got some workout video or something crazy where, like, he likes to show off his body.
Yeah, he's a very fit man. You know?
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to look this up. You keep talking.
He's not shy about going shirtless at all. He's been photographed shirtless, like standing in cold Russian rivers while fishing. He's definitely the most manly head of state there is. You know, I'm struggling to think of one. I mean, the other one that comes to mind, I guess, is Arnold Schwarzenegger. But, you know, it's been a long time since Arnold has done anything uber manly like this. And so, you know, Vladimir Putin, I'm quite impressed. You know, usually you think he's a Russian asshole, but, you know, even though he is a Russian asshole, he's quite an impressive Russian asshole.
Yeah, I can't seem to find what I was thinking of, so maybe that didn't actually happen.
You thought he had a workout video or something?
I thought he had I thought he had something where, like, maybe it was just that,
Welcome to Gun Show. I will teach you how to work out and build big muscles.
Yeah, I can't figure out where it was exactly. Maybe it probably never happened. Maybe I'm confusing it with someone else. But
that would be fantastic. The presidential workout or the prime ministerial workout with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, I must have made that up. I'm sorry, everybody. but I could see him doing it. I could definitely see Putin
doing
that.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Not at all. So yeah, maybe he is the most... He's certainly the most interesting president. The most interesting man remains to be seen. Anyway, our last major news item for the evening is a recent study that came out indicating that teenagers have been texting quite a bit, to the tune of 3,000 texts a month on average, which begs the question for the rest of us, how many texts do you send, and what does this mean for society?
Right. This is based on a CBS News report that said that 15 to 18-year-olds now send an average of 3,000 texts a month. Now, that's a lot of damn texts. I personally, I only have a 200-text-a-month plan, and I usually go over that every month, but I don't go over it by that many. I'm usually in the low 200s every month. I don't know about you, Pa. How many do you usually send every month?
Well, somewhat embarrassingly, I'm usually in the, like, 2,000 to 2,500 range.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That is a lot of damn texts.
Yeah, yeah.
Why not just call them?
Well, because, honestly, like, 70% of them are to Nick, and they're about baseball. and so... What was the first question that was asked when people realized I've been texting that much about baseball? But I don't know. It's just one of the things where you just have to keep observing.
So what happens when you get your bill and it's 20 pages long every month?
Well, so first of all, I have an unlimited plan. I have a family unlimited plan. So it's $30 for the three of us with unlimited text messaging for all of us. So that obviously helps out a lot. I've never actually looked at the statement, but I'm guessing it is massive. the thing is that I also...
It must be bigger than the healthcare bill every month.
It must be. The other thing is I text very long text messages sometimes with, you know, proper, you know, like stories and punctuation and everything. So
yeah,
like,
you don't use text speak, I've noticed, in your text. Just
not at all.
Complete sentences. You know, that's the way I do things too. You know, I don't know. Not too many LOLs and smiley faces, and
I give a few of those, but you know, for the most part, there's an actual like sentence or thought there.
Yeah.
But the thing is, especially like, you know, if you have an iPhone, it's gonna autocorrect your typing and everything. So like, it's kind of hard to really be too sloppy with it. Although I have seen people somehow like mess up everything. But yeah, so that's currently my text consumption, and
I'm very surprised. I feel like I'm an albatross of my age group. You know, I feel like most people my age text and use much more data than I do. I mean, I'm only at about 50 megabytes a month for the data plan, and you know, that's an unlimited plan. And you know, people usually use a lot more than that, I think. I mean, how much do you use per month usually?
I usually use. I checked the AT&T charts. Since baseball season has started, my data usage has gone up by 30%. But usually I'm in like the 200 to 250, 300 range. But I mean, again, a lot of it is just like checking scores.
Yeah, see, I guess I'm just a really light user.
Well, and I stream a lot of radio for sports.
Oh, that's true. And you have that
games
package, right?
Games sometimes.
Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, there are definitely – the big thing is – so like, for example, I use that much, but like – I don't really see how people who have jobs could use much more than me, because for the most part, you're like sitting at a computer anyway.
Right.
And then at night, you're like at home, or if you're not at home, you're like on wireless a lot. So, I mean,
yeah, you so you should be hooked really up to your Wi-Fi anyway.
Exactly.
At work, you know, I'm at work for what, like 9-10 hours a day, and I have no reception in my office. So, you know, that's a good portion of the day that I'm just cut off from all wireless usage.
Right. So you have no chance even.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the new plan is coming out, and so if you and I were to get new iPhones, we'd have to, you know, give up our unlimited for $30 deal.
Is it true that you can be grandfathered in though? That you can just
I heard if with a new iPhone you can't be grandfathered. I think it's only if you're maintaining your old iPhone.
Oh.
But I'm not 100% on that. Well, at either rate though, for you and I, we would definitely save a lot of money. I mean,
right.
You could probably, I think, what, it's like a 200 megabyte limit? So, like, you could easily downgrade to that and only pay
$15. Yeah, the 200 megabyte limit is only $15 a month, I think. And, yeah, and I never go over 200 megabytes for my data plan. So, that'll save me about $15 a month on data.
Exactly. And so that's actually great for you. You know, that's a pretty significant reduction.
Yeah, and, you know, even if you get the 2 gigabytes per month plan, that's only $25 a month, so you'll still save $5 a month over the regular unlimited plan.
Right. That's kind of my dilemma, is that, you know, I know eventually I'm going to get a new iPhone, and if I go for the $25 a month plan, I mean, I could try to go for the $50 a month plan, and history has shown that that might work sometimes, but, you know, when you go over, that's when they really get you.
Yeah,
so
those overages are crazy.
Yeah, I'd probably have to go for the 2 gig plan, which is really just wasting a lot.
Especially texts, you know, every time I go over every month, it's 10 cents per text, and, you know, they charge you going in and going out.
Yep.
So it's really double, and, you know, those things really add up quick.
Yeah, I think the only reason why I got unlimited in the first place was because my phone broke one month, and I couldn't talk on the phone, I could only text, and
oh, that's right.
I racked up like $40 or something. So, yeah, since then, it's been unlimited the whole time.
You had to plug in the earpiece every time you wanted to make a phone call.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I can only afford the 200 texts a month plan, because that's only $5 a month. I don't have a family plan. I have to pay my own. So if I want to get unlimited, that's an extra like $30 a month, and that's just not somewhere I'm willing to go. And plus, I don't text enough to justify it anyway. So,
right. Now I'll understand if you don't respond to my text messages.
Yeah, if I don't respond to your text messages, it's nothing personal. It's just probably I'm nearing the limit for the month and I don't want to pay.
That's also one of the funny things about texting for me, is that, like, it's one of the few arenas where you can, like, make someone pay without them wanting to pay.
Yeah.
Like, if you're trying to stop at someone, you could just send them a shitload of text messages.
It's like, haha, I have unlimited, like, and I'm charging you 10 cents.
Exactly. Here's 100 text messages. Have fun paying 10 extra dollars that you don't want to spend, that you obviously don't want to spend because you would have bought a plan if you, like, were willing to in the first place, right?
Yeah.
So, like, that's definitely an interesting way to rack up money on someone else's bill.
A cruel thing to do.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, so yeah, that's kind of where I'm standing. I'm definitely looking to get a new iPhone at some point.
Yeah, I think in the next few months, I'm definitely going to upgrade to the iPhone 4.
I'm going to try to make it to the next generation, but
it's going to be a few years at least, Paul. Though
is it a few years? Because they always have one every year.
Do they? I mean, Oh, yeah, I guess that's true. 3G came out 2 years ago.
3G was 2008. 3GS was 2009.
Out, right.
And then the original one came out in 2007. So, like,
yeah.
The thing is, I can't expect a big upgrade for the new one. I mean, because, you know, the iPhone 4 was such a big overhaul. I feel like the next one won't be nearly as drastic.
Yeah, especially if they need to fix that antenna problem that everyone's making a big deal of.
That's true.
But yeah, see, for me, I don't think I can last another year, because my iPhone is, you know, it's getting down to where I can barely go through one day on battery life. And, you know, dust is creeping inside the screen because of that time I had to take it off and replace it. So I'll have to, like, take off the screen again every couple weeks or so and clean the dust off. And that's getting really annoying.
You're running ragged.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to upgrade pretty soon here.
Okay, well, let me know how it is, Steve, because you know that I'm very tempted, but I haven't really spent any extensive time with one, so I haven't been too tempted, if you know what I mean.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's sad that we're talking about not, you know, if we're going to upgrade, but when we're going to upgrade, because we've obviously become addicted to these things now.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's one of those things where, like, for me, I've never... I usually either lose or break my phone before I decide to upgrade. So it's always like an inevitable upgrade, something I have to do.
Yeah.
Which is why, like, to have the opportunity to do it, but not to actually do it yet is kind of a new feeling for me. So, but I also think it's pretty, telling that, you know, we're there's no question or doubt.
Oh, none at all. Like, none whatsoever.
It's not like, okay, well, maybe I'll just get a BlackBerry or a Droid. It's like, no, I'm getting a new iPhone.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's pretty vital for normal life function at this point.
It is
kind of sad, but, you know, hey, that's where we are.
I do so much on this thing, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to the multitasking. That's actually the one thing I think that would make me want to do it immediately. Because for me, it's like, well, so you get that one text message, you know, and then you're in like an app and you like are streaming radio from it and checking something. And it's like, well, I lose the radio.
Yeah,
I
lose it cuts off.
I have to fire up the text message, wait for my laggy text messaging because I have so many of them, and then like send the message and then fire up the app again and then connect again. It's like, oh, this is such a pain in the ass. That's the main reason why I'd want to upgrade.
All right. Well, yeah, I'll let you know how it goes.
Okie doke. Well, I think we'll move on to the Mary Boff kill portion. Just as a little preview, we're going to have... Let's see. We'll probably do another episode next week. And then the week after, we'll have our Wire exclusive episode where we talk about nothing but the Wire. And we'll bring Josh Kim on as our first real guest.
That'll be live from New York City, by the way.
Live from New York. And we will just destroy the Wire for hopefully like 2 hours or something ridiculous.
Oh, God. I can't wait for it. It's going to be so good.
I know. It's going to be great. Oh, by the way, I only have one more episode of Friday Night Lights for this season, and then we can talk about it next
week. Yeah, yeah. The new season, I think it's like 2 months from Friday or something that it starts, or 2 months from today exactly.
Okay,
yeah, I think it's actually, yeah, 2 months from today is when the fifth and final season begins. So can't wait for that either.
All righty. Anyway, for this week, we will end with the Mary Boff kill for the week. I guess I'll lead us off. So I've been thinking about, you know, divas lately with the start of football season. And I've decided to extend that to the musical diva, the traditional diva. And so I'm proposing a trio of Mariah Carey, Beyonce Knowles, and Madonna. And to make it a little more fair, we'll just say like each of them in their prime. Because okay. Madonna's obviously older.
Yeah. If you said Madonna now, that would be too obvious of a kill. Because, you know, she's been through so many now. She's been through, like, Jose Canseco and A-Rod and Guy Ritchie and a laundry list of guys that is just makes her disgusting at this point. But if you don't remember, nobody in our generation really remembers because we were too young. But in her prime, Madonna was unquestionably the number one babe on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. It's for you, Steve.
Oh, I'm going first. Okay.
You're starting.
Beyonce, Mariah, and Madonna. In their primes. See, Mariah Carey, when exactly was her prime? Because when she first came on, she was kind of like a classy singer, you know, a classy R&B singer. And then at one point, she just decided to skank it up. And, you know, had her biggest hits probably while skanked up, but, you know, also was a little more disgusting than she used to be. So, you know, how do you – I don't know when exactly we define Mariah Carey's
– you know, I think her prime was probably like – I don't know. She's aged, at least looks-wise,
like,
pretty well.
Would you say when around the time when Honey came out?
Yeah. Was that, like 2000 – wasn't Honey with Jessica Alba?
No, I think it was a song that has nothing to do with that movie by Mariah.
Like a couple years
before the actual Jessica Alba movie, I think.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I think Mariah Carey's movie was Glitter, and that was the beginning of the end for Mariah Carey.
Definitely. Well, yeah, let's say it's probably like, you know, early 2000s or something like that for her.
Okay. Well, yeah. I think I'd have to marry Beyonce because she's incredibly hot and it seems like she's the most stable of the three. Like, you don't really hear, I mean, about Beyonce doing crazy shit. Like, Madonna will just do crazy shit. Mariah Carey can skank it up sometimes. But Beyonce knows who she is, and she doesn't really change that. You know, she's just a bootylicious diva, and that's, you know, that's her act. That's what she does, and she's consistent. So I think I'd have to marry her. And I think I'd have to fuck Madonna, because, like I said earlier, in her prime, she was the undoubtedly number one sex symbol in the world. And, you know, everyone wanted to have sex with her. She was like the sex goddess. So I would have to have sex with Madonna, and then I would reluctantly have to kill Mariah Carey.
Okay. That's pretty logical and well-reasoned, in my opinion. I will also marry Beyonce because I think she's like the hottest, greatest woman ever. She's pretty much my favorite just out of anyone. So
yeah, who doesn't love Beyonce, right? Everyone loves Beyonce.
She sings, she dances, she's gorgeous, she does it all. So Beyonce is an easy choice to marry for me. I don't really like Mariah Carey, and I know Madonna was like super sexy, but I just never was around for that. So honestly, I think I'll have to chuck Madonna and fuck Mariah.
All right.
Or just because of I can't really like put myself. It's kind of like when you see like a classic movie with what was then like a really, really like attractive, beautiful sex symbol, and like they definitely were beautiful, but it's just like a different era.
Yeah, it looks dated. You know, it's not like
it just looks funny.
The way beauty is defined through the generations is different.
Exactly. So so that's why I'm going with my three.
It's weird to think now that Madonna is from Detroit.
She's from Detroit?
Yeah, she's from Detroit. And it's really weird because she's been all over the place nowadays. But yeah, she's from Detroit. Isn't that weird?
I didn't realize that. That's weird.
Yeah. All right, but anyway, my list for this week is Jewish actresses. And in the past, I've done questionably Spanish actresses. I've done Indian actresses. And now we're moving on to the next ethnic group, Jewish actresses. So we're going to go with Natalie Portman, who was born in Israel, and her family are Israeli Jews. Mila Kunis, whose family are Ukrainian Jews. And Emmanuel Shariki Sloan from Entourage, whose family are Moroccan Jews. So, you know, Jews from three different countries across Europe and the Middle East. Three very beautiful women. So, Paul, go ahead, have at it.
Boy, you like to pick them tough here. I really like Natalie Portman a lot. I think she's obviously very attractive, but, you know, kind of, she has a very, like, down-to-earth quality about her. So marrying her is a pretty easy call. It's a little tougher after that because Emmanuel Chicory is gorgeous.
You really don't want to toss any of these girls.
Yeah, which is why you always make them so difficult. Emmanuel Chicory is gorgeous, and Mila Kunis is also gorgeous, and she's really blossomed to become quite gorgeous lately. But I think at the end of the day, Mila Kunis' voice just annoys me. I think it's supposed to, because every role she's ever had has almost been like geared on her having an annoying voice.
Yeah. Meg and Jackie.
Meg and Jackie. So it's kind of tough to avoid. Well, I mean, if you have to find like a deciding factor, you know, that might be it for me. So,
yeah, that's good as a factor as any.
Yeah, I'll check Mila and I'll do Emmanuel Chicory.
Yeah, this is really tough. I'm kind of mad at myself for picking this because I kind of want to marry all three of them. But I know that's not allowed in this game.
It's not allowed. That's not allowed at all.
Yeah, but I think I'll marry God. I think I'll marry Emmanuel Shariki. Because she just seems like the nicest out of all of them.
Okay.
And that's not based on anything I know about her. I know absolutely nothing about her.
Well, you've seen Entourage, and
yeah,
she gets married there, so that's
it's just,
kind of logical.
Her character of Sloane is like the most desirable wife that anyone could ever have, really. You know, Sloane is really kind of like the perfect woman. And so...
Wow. That far of a statement, huh?
I mean, yeah, what's wrong with Sloane in Entourage? There's really nothing wrong with Sloane.
Nothing's wrong with Sloane.
She's beautiful, she's she's all together, you know, she doesn't really have... she doesn't really have many issues.
Yes.
She's rich, you know, I mean, what's not to like about Sloane in Entourage? Absolutely
not.
That's true.
That's fair. I'll give that to you.
God. I really have no idea on the other two.
Well, you can't really go wrong.
Yeah. I guess I'll have to fuck Natalie Portman and Chuck Mila Kunis. And the only reason is because Natalie Portman played that stripper in Closer that one time. And
oh, yes.
She was just so hot, so sexy in that movie. But yeah, that's the only reason. Because, God, this is tough. I wouldn't want to kill either of them, or any three of them, actually. So yeah, I guess that would be my three.
That's an interesting decision. I think I could have gone any order without having Natalie Portman being the fucked one. And maybe marrying Mila. Those are the only two that I couldn't do. Any other combination would have worked for me.
I probably could have gone all three with all three of them. You know,
I don't think it's allowed, Steve.
I know.
It's the whole point of this exercise. just like how you don't want any of them sometimes, this time you want all of them.
Yeah, I'll try to pick an easier one next week. This one's tough.
No, the tough ones are more, they're more rewarding when you come to a decision.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think it's going to do it for us this week. So stay tuned, and next week we will join you again.
All right, thanks for listening. Bye.
I don't always drink beer, but when I do, I prefer Dos Equis. Stay thirsty, my friends.